Welcome to the House Water Committee. We have a couple of items on the agenda today. The first issue that we're dealing with is House Bill 2025, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2025. And Representative Crummell is not with us today, but his staff is, and I wonder if you'd like to give us a quick overview of what Representative Dash 5 Amendment is all about. I think we've been there and heard it, but we'd like to review it today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and good afternoon. For the record, Don Phillips, Chief of Staff for State Representative Jerry Crummell, District 26. And I believe Representative Brown is going to do the honors for us today to get these amendments out on the table for us. But I guess to cut to the chase, you've heard Representative Crummell's amendments before. They offer local control. They offer money for local jurisdictions to actually move the fluoride train down the track, another few yards or miles, as the case may be. And I guess by comparing and contrasting the other amendments that may be before you today, let me just offer the following points. Representative Crummell's amendments do focus on local control and allow local water districts and water users and local governments to decide whether fluoride is right for their drinking water or not. The other amendments that will be in front of you do have an element of local control, but it is still a state mandate. And I believe that in talking with some of the folks at the League of Cities and other organizations, that it would put local governments in kind of a rock and a hard place in terms of they would have to vote not to support fluoride in order to get out from underneath the state mandate. And I know that the other amendments do include that it would be a state mandate, but they would not have to implement until they found funding from a source other than local ratepayers. But I still believe Representative Crummell would support local control over these other amendments and giving more flexibility at the local level. The second advantage that that Representative Crummell's amendments have is that there is a funding mechanism, as you'll see in the Dash 5s, that we do have money coming from the Water Fund. There's up to about $12 million that is currently being used by the Water Fund to fund local water projects. And under this amendment, that would free up some of that money to be used for local fluoride projects. And local jurisdictions could apply for grants and loans with the Water Fund through the Economic Development Department. Compare that to the other set of amendments in front of you, which does not have any funding source available. So overall, I guess the bottom line is Representative Crummell's amendments would give you that local flexibility and also a funding source, and the other amendments would not. And I think that boils it down for you today, and I think that Representative Crummell would appreciate your consideration of his amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your bringing it forward. Representative Brown.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 5 amendments to 2025.
Representative Brown moves the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2025. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
I, as Don has already stated very well, that Representative Crummell's amendments, the Dash 5 amendments, allows public entity to the cities and local water districts to have a say in their direction, and if they choose to adopt fluoride in their water, a mechanism for funding that. And my main concern with the original bill was the unfunded mandate being placed on cities.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Other discussions? Chair, I would like to comment just briefly, since there's a number of the cities and others here who perhaps would be supportive of this amendment. And I would challenge any member of the committee or anyone in the body to publicly state that we should repeal all of the Voting Rights Act of 1964 and the Civil Rights Acts of 1965. And I believe I have the dates right on those, so like the two may be reversed. That's right. additionally, and I hope everyone understands that in Oxford, Mississippi, if it had been a vote of the city in Oxford, Mississippi, as to whether or not James Meredith could go to school in that city, it would probably have been close to a unanimous vote that he not be allowed into the University of Mississippi. Without getting to perhaps such a grandiose illustration as that, there are a number of others illustrations that, we get to the issue of local control. There have been a number of bills since I've been here that wanted to take things that some of you would have supported and some of us would have opposed and make it an issue of local control, like the ability of the city of Portland to ban handguns when people have a permit to carry. There are times that state legislatures, federal legislation must rise above, and I respectfully submit that I think this is one of those times. Though I do appreciate, and I am very staunch supporter of the rights of cities and counties and local jurisdictions, and will continue to be so regardless of the outcome of this bill today or any time in the future. If there's no other question, then the would you call the roll on Representative Brown's motion to move LC 5 to House Bill 2025.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Brown?
All right.
Representative Balto?
No.
Representative Tomei?
No.
Vice Chair Dingfelder?
No.
Vice Chair Kremel excused. Chair Jensen?
No.
I feel like the Lone Ranger.
Did you vote or did you pass?
I voted.
You did. I beg your pardon.
That's okay.
The motion, having failed to receive a majority, is declared defeated. At this point, the chair would entertain a motion to move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2025.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2025. Would you explain the dash two amendments for it? These are Representative Anderson's, and if there's a need or that anyone has to have Representative Anderson speak to them, he will come down, but we have talked about them before. If you just briefly go through them, Sandy, and tell us what they do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the dash in your packet, you have Hand and Gross with the dash two amendments. The dash two amendments deletes the funding appropriation and Section 3, and it adds a new Section 3 that states that water suppliers serving more than 10,000 persons add fluoride to the water supplied for human consumption, and that the supplier may cease implementation of the water fluoridation system if sufficient funds to pay for the implementation are not available from any source other than fees or charges levied by the supplier or the supplier's ratepayers, shareholders or local taxpayers, or bondholders.
Okay. All right. Is there a discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 7 amendments as a substitute amendment to the Dash 2 amendments.
Representative Barnhart moves the dash 7 amendments as a substitute to the dash 2 amendments. To your motion, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The dash 7 amendments are an attempt to move one step beyond the dash 2 amendments. The dash 7 amendments make essentially the same substitution as the dash 2s with a cleanup of the language around implementation in lines, let's see, 7 and 8 of the dash 7 amendments as compared to lines 7 and 8, same lines of the dash 2 amendments. In addition to that, the dash 7 amendments also allows for the electors, that is the voters of a water supply district or a county or city, to essentially opt out if they do so before January 1st, 2006. I think this deals with the issue that a number of us have been concerned about, that a number of localities have taken positions on this issue and also have raised concerns about the state essentially preempting the area. This allows for a preempt, but it doesn't really begin until January 1st, 06. In the meantime, cities, water districts, and counties can opt out if they have a vote of the people to do that. The difference between that and the dash fives, of course, is that the fives would only require a vote of the public agency.
Representative, excuse me, but could I ask a question?
Sure.
Would you support that the city of Oxford could have admitted Mr. Meredith and then subsequently had a vote of the citizens of the city of Oxford and removed him?
No.
Thank you. I the chair would make the same observation in relationship to the dash 7 amendments that we made to the previous amendments. And I don't use this illustration lightly, and I don't mean to use it lightly, members. We are, I think, fundamentally talking about a very important health issue. We're talking about young people, children, babies, really, whose health we're putting in the hands of a very opinionated electorate on this particular issue. And colleagues, like I say, I think it's time for us to bite the bullet and move forward with it. No other questions? Would you call a roll?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Delco.
Well, I had a comment. I was waiting to be invited to offer a comment.
Please.
And my comment is, while I appreciate what the good representative from Lane County is trying to accomplish, I think that I'm going to vote no on this substitute amendment, only because I think that at some point we need to make a decision as a state, and we need to on fluoridation, and announce that it is our statewide policy on fluoridation, and that it cannot be left to each individual municipality to make that decision for the more than 200 cities across this state, and certainly for the handful of cities that are above 10,000 population. So I'm going to be voting no.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate your comments. You're very kind in your comments and very direct, and probably much kinder than the representative the chair was. And I hope the representative understands and appreciates the chair's position on it. Any other comments? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment on the most recent comment by Representative Dalto. because I want to make certain that it's understood what this amendment does. It does not give the veto right over the whole state to any particular water district or municipality, but only over the use of that, only over the mandate in that area. It wouldn't affect any other area at all. And it wasn't clear to me from his comments whether he thought that's what it meant. And I wanted to make certain that we all understood that that was not what this was about. Thank you. And I suspect from his facial expression that he didn't mean it that way, and so I'll accept that. I just wanted to be very cautious to be understood correctly.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I meant it exactly how I said it, and I appreciate the right honorable gentleman from Lane's County's clarification here, but I'm pretty understanding and, yeah, and aware of what his amendment is attempting to do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your roll, please.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Dalto?
No.
Representative Tomei?
No.
Vice Chair Dingfelder?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carmel excused. Chair Jensen?
No. At this point, we are back to the original motion to add the dash to two amendments to House Bill 2025. Are there any discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now that we've disposed of the issue of local control and we're back on the question of whether or not the state should require the fluoridation of water supplies serving over 10,000 people, and we're back to the question of whether or not we're going to pay for it or whether we're going to substitute some kind of a requirement that it be done, but that it be done in payment of who knows how. I think it's important for us to recognize that we appear to be adopting a mandate. Maybe we are if we pass the dash twos, maybe we're not. It really depends on somebody else out there to go out and find the money to do it. It may be done on a piecemeal basis, which I understood was a criticism of my amendment, that it would be piecemeal. In places where somebody feels strongly enough about it to be able to afford it privately or through some association. I think if we're going to do this in a clean manner, and we feel strongly about the need to fluoridate water throughout the state, starting with servers of more than 10,000 people, that we ought to take that honestly, go for it, come up with the funds to pay for it, and do it that way. And therefore, respectfully, I intend to vote no on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative, and the Chair certainly shares much of your issues and concerns with this. So we happen, unfortunately, right now to live in a day when the money through the general fund area would not be available. I think a future legislature may have a different approach to this, but while I share your position and understand your position, I think we're kind of a victim of the circumstances of time at this point. And like the good representative from Salem, I think it's important for us to put the issue out there as far as the policy of the state shall be, and if and when funding is available, why, then we'll move in that direction. Is there any other comments or questions?
Would you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Dalto?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dingfelder?
Aye.
Vice Chair Crummell? Excuse. Chair Jensen?
Aye. The House Bill 2025, as amended with the dash two amendments, is passed. And at
Mr. Chair, if I may, I think we were just voting on the dash two amendments.
That's right.
Thank you.
Yeah. The dash two amendments have been added to House Bill 2025, to clarify.
Thank you, Mr.
For the record. Thank you, Representative. At this point, I'd entertain a motion to move the dash, or the House Bill 2025 as amended to the floor with a deuce pass recommendation of and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalton.
I move House Bill 2025 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Representative Balto has moved House Bill 2025 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an issue that's been before the state of Oregon for many, many years. There's a lot of information, a lot of opinions and beliefs about it. It doesn't seem to cut along partisan lines or any other lines that I can find as people consider this issue. But it is an extremely important public health issue as we look at protecting the dental health of our children and also actually of adults. And as we look at the emotional costs and the financial costs of failing to provide for that health, we are in a situation now where it's appropriate for us to proceed and to do what we can to see that our public health is protected in this additional way.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate very much your comments. Representative Dalton.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for your efforts on House Bill 2025 to make it the state policy that waters and municipal water systems with cities over 10,000 people be fluoridated. We've spent quite a bit of time on this issue, and I have a special energy on this bill because I have made it a decision, I think, in my career, not to get behind an issue because I want to keep it alive, because it's a perennial issue, because I want to keep things in front of the public for debate. I decided that I want to approach issues and put my energies in them to affect positive and effective public policy, and that's why I'm very excited about what we're about to accomplish here today. We've spent time with our Health Committee, Health and Human Services Committee, at the Give Kids a Smile Day and saw examples of dental decay from being suffered by low-income children. And we've heard testimony in this committee about that, and we have photographs and evidence of what damage is done to children by sugar, by poor hygiene, dental hygiene habits, and by poor access to dental care. And fluoridation is a contentious issue, I've learned. I've learned that there are many different perspectives about whether it's positive or not. But one thing I will say, though, is that especially for the kids that we're trying to reach, the low-income children and the children that don't have regular access to dental care, but for the charity that some dentists are able to provide and some hygienists and limited access permit dental hygienists are able to provide, we have a lot of people in this state who have a lot to learn about parenting, a lot to learn about a lot of things, and you have children that don't have the proper hygiene habits, dental hygiene habits, to prevent decay and serious damage to their teeth. And so what happens is you have children who have significant decay. And this is very fascinating. I've learned so much through the public debate on bills like this. Once you have decay in your mouth, it changes your whole being. Whether you're an adult, whether you're a child, whatever you are, you're unable to be comfortable and confident when you speak. You're embarrassed to open your mouth. In some cases, if you're a child and you have your teeth are rotting away, the other kids make fun of you, and so it impacts your ability to learn. And certainly, if you're in serious pain and your dental health is suffering, it impedes your ability to learn. And what we want is we want children to arrive at school fed, well taken care of, and ready to learn. And so I would love it if the situation was that children without this access or children that are at risk for dental decay would be able to have that provided at home and the protections and the proper appropriate hygiene at home. But the reality is, with our society the way it is, with people having to work more and more to be out of the house, away from their families, to be able to keep a roof over their heads, and if the kids are drinking sugary drinks, sugary juices, snacks, and all that kind of stuff, and aren't taking care of their fragile teeth, you know, this is going to happen. And fluoridation is not a perfect solution, but it's going to protect these kids. And I apologize for my five-minute diatribe here, but I feel good about what we're accomplishing today because we are going to help those kids who don't appear to be able to help themselves. And it's just, I'll bring in pictures and I'll blow up a huge picture of a kid's mouth when we go on the house floor and explain what a difference this is going to make to people. But it's awful that these kids have to suffer. And at some point, the public's health and the lawmakers that we are, we have to make this, determination and declaration that this is going to be the policy for this state. And that's why I'm so supportive of this measure. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo the comments we heard from a good representative from Lane County and a good representative from Salem. I won't try to repeat all of those good things that I too agree with. I think that this is a very, very good public health policy that we're sending forth here, and we'll go, in this day and age when our health costs are escalating very fast, this type of legislation helps us to get a certain amount of control on those issues also, and I'll be voting yes on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say in the four short years I've been in this body, I've had the I don't know if I want to say good fortune, but experience of hearing bills on pumping your own gas and implementing a sales tax, and now I've had the experience of I don't know, 15 hours of hearings on fluoride. So I almost feel like a native Oregonian now because I've actually been indoctrinated. But on a more serious note, I will be voting in favor of this bill today. We've heard, as my colleague, Representative Dalton, said, a lot of interesting information in the many hours we've listened to a variety of viewpoints. But I think we all take this decision very seriously. One of the things I would like to comment on, though, although this does help towards, as Representative Dalton said, providing access to better dental health, I would like to urge this body that we think about reinstating a coverage under the Oregon Health Plan for low-income Oregonians that do not have access to dental care. And that's another thing that we can do right here in this body, is try to find a way to fund the Oregon Health Plan to continue coverage for low-income Oregonians, because that is also a huge step that we can take in trying to provide access to dental care for all Oregonians. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. And just quickly, I noted that you left out one bill that we may be able to...
Water. Who owns the water right?
No.
Oh.
A bill on studded tires, maybe.
Oh, well, in deference to my colleague off on this side, I left that off. I lived through that one as well. But.
Oh, okay. thank you, and I'd like to... make a concluding comment before we call the roll on this, and thank everybody on the committee. Thank you for your indulgence, your hard work, for sharing your thoughts with me, for not even getting mad at me sometimes when we had discussions about it, and for what really appeared, in my estimation, to be a genuine effort on your parts to try to get to a solution that is the best one that we're going to have a chance of getting out of the building, that will be of benefit to the children of this state and to the health of the children of this state. I am personally deeply grateful for what the work that you've done. I thank your staffs for all of the pros and cons, emails and letters and phone calls that they've taken on this issue. And with that, I would also like to thank all of the people of the state of Oregon, those who have favored, those who opposed this bill, for their input into it. That is the way the process is supposed to work. We've tried very hard to make sure that everybody has had an opportunity to have a say. We've listened to a lot of testimony in this committee on this issue, and I know many of you have read a lot of information on this as we I looked at the pile, and it's pretty deep. And since most of us are not chemists or doctors or dentists, it's not all that easily read. And I know a lot of you labored over that, and I really, you know, appreciate your efforts with it. So, with that, I guess we would ask for the roll to be called.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Dalto?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dingfelder?
Aye.
Vice Chair Crummell excused. Chair Jensen?
Aye. Having received a...
Mr. Chair, can we put this on the consent calendar?
I think we should make Representative Dalto carry it.
Representative, with all of the... I will bow to the wishes of the committee, but the chair's preference would be that Representative Dalto carry this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On the floor. He has worked hard with it. And appreciate all that he's done on the committee and before the committee, and I would like to see him carry the bill at this time. I will rescind that if you... Okay. Representative Dalto is the carrier. Okay, we close the work session then on House Bill 2025 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2171. And please, Sandy.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2121 authorizes the Department of Human Services. House Bill 2171 authorizes the Department of Human Services to impose a fee on water supplies for costs of conducting the sanitary surveys for the purposes of recovering the cost of that survey. This bill has a prior, is subsequently referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. And I'll get the sign-up sheet.
Oh, okay, we have a sign-up sheet on. Before we call first witnesses on this, would remind the committee that this was a bill that came out of the, or an action that came out of the 03 session. We had a request in the 03 session for the addition of a couple of positions to the DHS budget for purposes of the water surveys. There was in that session, as there is in this session, some problems and issues to be concerned with as far as money is concerned. There were also some other problems that we had between, as I'm recalling, the various and sundry stakeholders, if I hate that word, in this area. So we ask the interested parties, affected parties, to get together and a task force formed to work out a bill that would meet the needs of the Department of Human Resources and the federal government having to do with the Clean Water Act. They met during the interim. They brought us a bill to the interim committee on water, I believe Representative Dingfelder was the only one there with me at that time, but we moved that that bill out of the House Ag, actually went to the full interim committee on Ag and Natural Resources after it left the subcommittee on water. And from the House Committee on Natural, or Interim Committee on Ag and Natural Resources, then it was passed out as a committee bill. This bill subsequently winds back up in our lap then in the session, and we will we did have a public hearing on it. We're going to have this is the first public hearing, excuse me. And we will have first off the department. We have Gail Shipley, Roger Jordan, all you people, four of you together.
Just
the
two.
Just the two? Okay. present your case, present the information for us. Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Gail Shibley. I'm the administrator of public health systems for the state of Oregon. And it is an absolute delight to be with you today, continuing on with your theme about public health related to the state's drinking water. This seems actually quite timely and fitting. Mr. Chair, it is precisely because of your leadership and your commitment to safe drinking water that we are here today, and I want to start off by saying a very heartfelt and official thank you for your leadership for this committee, Representative Dingfelder as a member of the O3 session as well. This is exactly why we are here. We did what you asked. And we have a good product, a good process, and great people who participated, and we believe the policy that is right as well. As you point out, Mr. Chair, in 2003 there was House Bill 2255, which, as most bills that get a hearing have an opportunity to do, becomes an A in gross, 2255. And because of that, a very diverse group of interested parties, affected parties, knowing your distaste for this word, holders of stake, got together. They wore a whole variety of hats. Some of them were from big water systems, small water systems, public water systems, private water systems, the federal government, citizen oversight as well. And 2255, as amended, required us this task force to specifically look at what were the needs and what were the resources to ensure safe drinking water within the state of Oregon. And I will let my compatriot here provide some additional specifics about just what that task force did. I will tell you a little more than parenthetically. Roger Jordan here is the city manager of the city of Dallas. I was joking with him that we have to stop meeting this way. It seems like every time we get together, it's always to talk about drinking water, and this is the second time in a row now that we've appeared together to come and present information to your committee.
The chair takes some exception to the fact that you have to start, you know,
meeting like
this in this committee. The implication is it's okay in someone else's committee.
I'll have to brush up on my English here, but let me also say a particular thank you to the other members of the committee. The League of Oregon Cities, Roger Jordan, as I mentioned, Willie Tiffany, Tom Penpraise from the City of Corvallis, the Special Districts Association of Oregon, Amanda Rich, Dan Bradley, Todd Heidgerken, the Oregon Association of Water Utilities, with Jason Green at the table, the United States Forest Service, Head of Engineering, Richard Soa, the Conference of Local Health Officials, our partners at the county level, Mike Mazaros from Curry County, Dave Kreider from Gilchrist, representing a private-owned water system regulated by the Public Utility Commission, and the League of Women Voters, Louise Kustad, representing consumer interests and citizen interests as well. We chewed through some pretty tough issues, a great deal of skepticism about what exactly is the need. I don't see any bodies on the street. Why in the world do you need more money? What's the problem at any rate? And the bottom line is that as a result of this process, the task force did find that Oregon's drinking water program is struggling and is continuing to struggle and, frankly, needs some assistance. And the task force was not the only one to have identified that. As the chair may recall, the Secretary of State did an audit back in 2000-2001, found significant deficiencies, frankly, because we just don't have the people and the oomph to put into the program to do the job that we need to do. Likewise, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency that regulates the Safe Drinking Water Act has also identified some significant and continuing, very troubling deficiencies, and we have with us a representative from the EPA today to provide perhaps some additional information as well. I just want to point out just a couple quick things that this bill, 2171, was identified in the task force report as one part of a three-part / four-part solution. This is a brand new fee, and nobody shies away from, you know, nobody's just trying to hide that. This is a brand new fee, and this is not something that we arrived at easily, trust me. Another part includes a direction not outside of the scope of this statutory proposal in front of you to stop subsidizing the two existing fees that we have. We have two existing fees for operator certification and for plan reviews. Those fees haven't been increased since the 1980s, and it's time that perhaps we actually brought those up to, you know, somewhere close to 21st century standards. What the recommendation of the task force was to take those three sources of locally generated other funds, apply that to federal matching funds at close to a 2-to-1 match, and generate close to $1 million a year in additional resources, specifically to focus on identified priorities and program deficiencies that fit with the recommendations of the task force, with the recommendations and direction from the US EPA, from the direction and recommendations from the Secretary of State's audit, and from the recommendations and priorities by the Drinking Water Advisory Committee. These are not something just thought up by, you know, some bureaucrat in a cubicle somewhere. These are very clear, crying need priorities that we want to get to work on. However, we need this package in order to do that. Having said that, all of the great work done by the task force members, and for some reason, I just caught myself what I was reading from, referring to from the in terms of the members of the task force. What it didn't include was a representative from the Manufactured Housing Association of Oregon, and I tremendously apologize to my former colleague Chuck Carpenter, who is as the executive director of that association, was also a member of the task force and participated in it. The final vote, if you will, in terms of the recommendation of the task force was less than unanimous. One member had reservations, voted yes with reservations. Several members were not present. There is one representative of the task force who was not present, who made his position clear before, and that is the representative from the Manufactured Housing Association of Oregon. I believe you may be hearing directly from them in a bit, and you may hear that, well, we don't need... We, meaning the state, small s, we don't need any additional money, we don't need any additional resources, and even at the possible prospect of losing or relinquishing primacy, state oversight of the safe drinking water effort within Oregon. I would posit that that is a distinctly minority position, very much held in opposition by other members of the task force. And in sum, I want to repeat that on behalf of the department, we strongly supported the process, the product, and the policy. We support scheduling this bill for a work session and sending it to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions. I'd prefer to wait till my colleague, Mr. Jordan, provides some information as well.
Thank you, Gail. Any questions before we move on to the next set of testimony? Thank you. Sir.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, my name is Roger Jordan, City Manager of Dallas, and I have been on the League of Oregon Cities Water Committee Chair, Vice Chair for a number of years. So each one of us in city government kind of picks a specialty, and one of the areas I've been working on is the area of water. And for the record, my wife is an LFO senior principal, so she's watching on TV. So, Mr. Chair, you don't have to worry. The committee that sent us out to take a look at that said there doesn't seem to be any consensus on the part of this issue. Let's get a group together and see of the affected users if we can build a consensus. That was one of our first choices in the committee after meeting that Gail has indicated. It was broad-based, a number of different groups, and obviously didn't see the same issue the same way right from the start. I was chosen as chair, and we worked through these problems. First of all, we did come up with some agreements, and as Gail indicated, in the end, we had consensus with the exception of one person who's an important person that can manufactured housing that represented a different issue. For the rest of us, we came to it with the position that there was a need in the state for accelerating and improving the program that regulates drinking water in Oregon. And from the positive side, we looked at it. If you were first going to identify what would you do about that, we raised consensus that safe drinking water was an important thing statewide. It's not really just a local choice. We need some standards. And we came to the consensus that primacy or Oregon regulating Oregon was the best way in accepting the federal program. We looked at identifying what those issues were that the committee needed to deal with, and many of us were concerned that we opposed a general water fee, sewer fee, some tag-on fee to pay for an enforcement program, but there was consensus on the majority that the program was deficient and needed additional staffing. Let me get quickly to the consensus we came up with, because that's the gist of the bill. As Gail indicated, we looked at, well, what funds now go into the program, where do they come from, and what do they pay for? And the League of Oregon Cities has always looked specifically if there's a fee-based program to make sure that you're getting something for your dollar. You're not just in a general program. And the bills, as Gail indicated, were the operator certification was currently being subsidized. That is, it wasn't paying for itself. And we agreed that's one thing we can do because that's something we do for somebody. And the plans that we review at the state level on behalf of those communities weren't paying for themselves, and that could be changed within the existing law regulation. So those two things, as a committee, we came to consensus that, yes, those were things that we were getting. The other thing we looked at was, rather than just a general fee, what are we getting for service? And one of the things the state does as a part of the Safe Drinking Water Program, which is mandated by the federal government, is for a review of your system. And we looked at what we were paying for those, which was currently zero. And we said that's something that we could get a value, a product that we might not mind paying for if, in fact, what we got was increased services. So the consensus of the committee was that primacy was so important that we may need to look at generating additional staffing and needs. And we were obviously on the committee, we started in different positions with the staff, different positions, and we modified that. This is not the panacea of all problems in the Safe Drinking Water Program. This deals with a very specific issue that we think this additional resources will resolve. We also looked and came to terms with the staffing level. We agreed that it was a statewide issue, but the general fund of the state had no money and it wasn't going to be dealt with. And we needed to deal with it because we need that program, not only as Oregonians, but those who provide the service. We saw that we could do a 2-to-1 match with federal money, so we could bring some local money to the table and we could match that with federal. And the program structure and the additional assistance was the most important thing. And finally, the leverage, the whole idea that you could leverage additional money into very specific programs. So we then embarked upon telling the department from our committee's position exactly where we thought the new positions would be helpful and what services. These were sanitary surveys. Right now we're at probably at 7 or 8 years. Sanitary surveys should be done by law every 3 to 5 years, depending on the size. We saw that some of the needs that we were providing for minimal cost to these particular smaller districts were very valuable. And we said, however, they're the ones having least likely to be able to pay the fee. So at the larger sanitary surveys, we said you're going to pay 100% of whatever the cost is. We calculated that. At the bottom, the smaller jurisdiction, we said they really can't afford that. So we're going to have a fee that doesn't recover 100%. And in fact, if the information that's been provided shows that up to $1,000 cost, and we're only asking for $150. Now remember, that's only every 5 years. So you don't have to pay, you have to pay over a period of time, but you have time to do that. As Gail indicated, this would generate about 11 new positions, very specific in nature, very helpful to the jurisdictions or water districts that they're providing services to, and very essential to Oregonians to ensure that they have safe drinking waters. I don't come before you very often with the support of the city council when we're talking about increased fees, but certainly our council unanimously indicated that this is an important addition to our program, and we ask that you support the bill and pass it on so that we can improve safe drinking waters for cities, counties, districts throughout Oregon, and citizens.
Are there questions for Mr. Jordan? For Gail?
For Gail.
Representative Dinkfeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for coming here, and I know you put a lot of work into this. And I read the report this summer, and I couldn't find the full report, so and some of this is from memory. But what's the threshold, the requirement for testing for domestic water supplies? I know for individual wells, there isn't a requirement, but what's the threshold? Is it the number of people served off of a community system? And the second part of that is if it's a private I mean, hypothetically, if it's a private mobile home park, is that considered a community water system? And I just can't remember.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Dingfelder, let's see if I can wade into this, no pun intended, and not get into too deep of water. Okay, I'll stop.
Why does everyone use puns in the water committee?
Deep water. Yeah. Yeah. Right. The more deep water you can get into in this committee, the better off.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's true. As long as it keep the turbidity down, I guess. The EPA regulates, and we are the agent for the EPA under primacy, of systems with serving 25 population and greater. And that's approximately, let's see, it's the 4 to 14 connections, or the 10 to 24 populations, and, you know, we can do a translation. There's some people speak in connections, number of connections in a water system, and some people speak in population. But under 25 population are state regulated entities. They are not EPA regulated entities. That regulation continues to be on the books in the state of Oregon, ORS. We certainly provide assistance, consultation, other response to those very small water systems. They are not part of what we are talking about today. This is for transient as well as non-transient water systems. There are community water systems of various sizes. There are non-transient, non-community water systems that are regulated, for example, schools, places of employment, churches, etc., because they are the same people get served over a period of time, and yet that's not where they live, in other words. And then there are transient non-community water systems, in other words, where the people come and go, different people, but they are not a community water system. For example, I mentioned the Forest Service was part of our task force. A Forest Service campground mm-hmm. would be a transient non-community water system. All of those entities are included under the regulations from the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act.
Okay, and a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
So if I'm, and I have the chart that was in the table from the report that you provided, and if I'm reading this right, it says that all of those different systems that you mentioned, you have down here a total of 760 as a number of inspections per year statewide. And if I'm understanding your chart in the pipeline here, mm-hmm. we currently have 3 DHS staff that conduct all of those surveys currently, and what you're proposing is by increasing fees we can increase that to 5.
Exactly.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, that's absolutely correct.
Okay.
In addition to, if I might add, in addition to specific prioritized functions like providing the regulatory assistance, improving surface water treatment, and so on, they're also listed in that same report.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Don't run off. We're not sure yet.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
No, don't run off.
Don't run off.
Yeah. We're not.
He's just getting started.
We're not through yet. How are we, as I look over your numbers here for the water sanitary surveys, I get a number of about $435,000. How's that being paid for now?
Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing the specific number you're
referring to. Well, I don't think you would because I did the arithmetic to get there.
Okay. Mr. Chair, all of the effort that the state and our county partners, the local public health authorities, provide focused on-site surveys, aka sanitary surveys, comes from one undifferentiated pot of money that is a combination of federal dollars and state match. There is no line item, no direct fee that is, you know, specifically focused on or comes from or otherwise related to these surveys.
So for the practical purposes, that can be general fund dollars.
Correct.
We could, I mean, even though there's some federal money in there, that federal money in there is fungible to be used in some other ways if we weren't using it here. Is that correct?
Any part of the program.
Okay. And if I'm looking at your current versus recommended additional staffing, if we get this, then we're looking at 21.6, if we add those two bottom, total technical support or total technical staff plus support staff, for the next biennium it would be 21.6.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Now, with an asterisk that those are not all state employees. As I mentioned, we rely very significantly on 20 local public health authorities, and so this will provide them additional dollars in their local communities to provide incremental focus and effort and priority. So approximately, we had kind of eyeballed, based on current proportionality, about 7 would be state, and the other 3 to 4 would be dispersed throughout the counties.
But they'd be picked up on county or what have?
We provide the money. The state.
But they're on county payroll, but you reimburse counties.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly right.
Mr. Chair, as we looked at it from the committee, it was a good distributed system. The state had those that were real cost effective, but they have contracts with the county jurisdictions where those are more cost effective. It's a good distribution of state and local labor completing the job.
I appreciate it. I'm just trying to get a kind of, you know, the old adage, you follow the dollars sort of thing. And trying to make sure that in my own mind I have those clear, and I would get down to the, and I appreciated Representative Dinkfelder's question because it answered some questions for me. But on the transient non-community water systems, I'd note that while you aren't charging them very much, they do represent, when you look at the total, and a significant portion of the total dollars that will be spent.
Correct.
And from I guess they don't cost you very much per unit, but
there's a lot of
and at the present time they're not paying anything. Is that
that's correct,
Mr. Chair? In essence, is. But of course, the problem with that, if it's the Forest Service, then it's a take it out of this kitty and put it in this kitty. As far as I mean,
Mr. Chair,
to become an item in their budget then.
Mr. Chair, if I could answer that, when the task force looked at that, that's a very similar question that you've got, and who do we affect, and how do we do the best job we can for protection of the public and drinking water, and who do we help the most? And what I indicated in my testimony is, if you look at the task force, looked at the smaller system, saying there's a lot of smaller system, but frankly, the sanitary surveys probably do more for them than they do for anybody else. And so we said, how could we make that affordable? Again, small systems once every 5 years, bigger systems like my community, I have 5 people that are out there running it, who go to school and do all that. So we pay the full cost. We do it once every 3 years. These folks would only have to do this and get this assistance once every 5 years under the law. We're hoping that by making a low-cost fee over a long period of time, that we can provide assistance to them. Frankly, even in our case, which we did a sanitary survey this last year, there were things that came up that were of assistance to us. So when I look at that, I know that's for some it's a difficult amount to pay, but we're not just paying a fee, we're getting something for it. We're getting a report that helps everybody talk about how can you comply with the law and how can you provide safe drinking water. That's the only reason, of course, the League of Oregon Cities would support a fee, is that there's some benefit to that fee.
Thank you. And one concluding question, I guess, that I have, and I think I understand this, but am I right that you're saying these periodic sanitary surveys are mandatory by the EPA?
Mr. Chair, that's absolutely correct.
And they are mandatory on the 3 or 5 year basis, as the case may be?
Mr. Chair, that's correct, depending on the source of the water.
Depending on the source of the water, okay. Surface versus groundwater.
That's correct.
All right, are there other questions? Representative Dingfelder.
One more before this current panel leaves. And Gail, you know I've spent a lot of time looking at this audit's report, which I just stole from Sandy because mine's filed away somewhere. I know, scary. But and I know that this bill, 2171, just addresses one aspect of this. Can you maybe talk briefly about other areas that we're looking at to address some of the other concerns? And, you know, for the committee, this is really timely. I mean, we spent many, many, many hours talking about fluoride, an additive to our water. And here is some really good information about some of the concerns that were raised by the Audits Division 2001. And here it is 2005, and we still have, I think, some that need to be addressed, such as the one you're talking about today. But did the task force look at any other responses to this audit report?
Mr. Chair, if I could answer that as chair, yes. Again, if you look down at the distribution of labor to representative, if you look at the distribution of labor that we did, it wasn't all sanitary surveys. The problems that you have, and of course we all agree or disagree with the Secretary of State's audit differently, but the issues that the task force looked at, they identified all of those that they thought were the most critical and ones that we have to deal with, not just sanitary surveys. And you'll see the distribution of labor dealing with those, and the recommended additional staffing deals with database, information getting out, not training, those kinds of things that we can do for systems that may be smaller or larger but are not reporting, all those things. So, yes, we dealt with the whole gamut of issues brought up by EPA and Secretary of State and brought it to a level that we as a committee or task force were comfortable with that would address those. Now, there were a couple of things that we couldn't do within the resources. One, if you recall the letter that I sent in, one was, well, what about future rules? I mean, they're passing rules and regulations, and I don't mind other people who will testify saying, when is this going to stop? I mean, that in a city manager's life is how many more rules, regulations, and things do I have to do with no additional money? But in this case, we looked at those that we felt were absolutely critical for the safety of the public, for keeping primacy, and that would be very helpful for each jurisdiction, and that's the ones we addressed. The FTE ratio is based on that.
Okay. Thank you. That's really helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And you won't run away. You'll stay in case we want to ask more questions as we get through.
Mr. Chair, I'm at your disposal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At this point, we have Dan Bradley and Mr. Rodriguez. Sicario, is that right? Mr. Rodriguez. Yes.
Chair Jensen, members
my
of
the error. Ma'am, I apologize.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, my name is Dan Bradley. I'm the general manager of Oak Lodge Water District, which just so you know is between the cities of Gladstone and Milwaukee. And I'm here today representing the Special Districts of Association of Oregon. And I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 2171. As my colleagues behind me will attest, it must be important because I seldom wear a tie and a jacket. So it's got to be an occasion. I also was a member of the task force, as Gail mentioned. Even with this funding that we came up with the task force, it still only provides about two-thirds of the available allotment that we could get in federal matching money. But I think at the time it was the best that we could do. In terms of the new fee for sanitary surveys, just as an example, I'm a member of the American Water Works Association, which has about 58,000 members worldwide. And out of 100 of us were selected for what they call the QualServe peer review. We actually are divided up into teams. I'm a team leader. My teammate is a water treatment plant operator from North Dakota. Finance guy is from Memphis, Tennessee. So it's a pretty diverse group where we actually go to utilities and spend 4 days looking at 19 different business categories. For a medium-sized system, that costs $40,000. The sanitary survey is a very similar process to that peer review that we do across the United States. So it's very, very important to us. It's a cost of service that we think is worth paying for and very valuable. It's typically my attitude is not to pay fees for anything, and I was one of the naysayers to begin with, but I'm fully supportive behind this whole process. I think the other two fee increases are also completely justified. Certification fees haven't been raised since they began, and the same way with plan review fees. So those are both very important things. So I thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of special districts. As you can see, I talk much less than Roger does, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. And yes, Mr. Rodriguez, please.
Thank you, Chair Jensen, and members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Socorro Rodriguez, and I'm the director of the Oregon Operations Office of the United States Environmental Protection Agency. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak this afternoon about House Bill 2171. I'm here, first of all, to demonstrate EPA's support for the efforts by the Oregon Department of Human Services to protect the public health of Oregonians by ensuring the safety of our drinking water. At present, the Department of Human Services has primacy. We've heard quite a bit of discussion of primacy. I won't go into it again. The state of Oregon at this point has full authority and responsibility for the implementation of the U.S. Safe Drinking Water Program here in the state of Oregon. As an agency, EPA strongly supports primacy in drinking water programs. 49 of our 50 states also support primacy for drinking water programs. However, as you've heard, the EPA's approval of primacy for drinking water programs is subject to individual states' compliance with federal statutory and regulatory requirements. And one example we've heard discussed quite a bit this afternoon is the requirement to inspect public water systems at least every 3 to 5 years. And at present, I heard this afternoon every 7 years. Earlier I had seen a statistic that said Oregon is able to inspect every 6 years. Either way, it's not in compliance with the federal requirement. So, as is apparent, in order to comply with federal requirements, state of Oregon requires more resources, meaning staff and funds. The fees that are potentially generated by the legislation that's proposed would be one source of those funds to support department inspections. Timely on-site inspections, sanitary surveys, as they've been called, are critical to maintaining the safety of Oregon's public water systems and essential to maintaining state primacy. As is apparent not only from our discussion today, but surely the history of this issue, Oregon is facing significant challenges in meeting its inspection obligations. And when measured by the number of staff relative to the number of systems in each state, Oregon's drinking water program is the smallest in the Northwest. Let me just give you a figure that I learned recently, which is in Oregon, there are 34 employees directly working for the drinking water program and 2,700 systems. 2,700. In Idaho, our Northwest neighbor, there are 40 employees directly working in the drinking water program and 2,000 systems. So,
And what?
2,000.
2,000 systems.
Fewer systems, more employees. So, Oregon's limited resources make it virtually impossible for it to comply with the inspection requirements, which are essential to primacy. There was a letter from Region 10's regional administrator, Mr. John Yanni. This was in 2003. It was addressed to Chair Jensen. We have copies of that letter if you'd like to see it again. And in that letter, EPA, the regional administrator, highlighted our concerns with compliance with the inspection requirements, along with other issues. The audit that's been discussed also, of course, pointed out the need for increased inspections. On a positive note, there are additional federal funds which could be made available to Oregon to support its primacy-related requirements. In order for these funds to be available, there must be additional state matching funds. By raising $310,000 in state funds, Oregon would become eligible for $590,000 in federal funds, which is a pretty good return on the investment. By not making this investment, Oregon is effectively leaving federal funds on the table. The Oregon Drinking Water Task Force, which proposed or came up with a creative idea that's being discussed today, proposing funding through an increase in current fees for services and in some cases an addition of a new fee. This was a proposal that came from a diverse group of affected parties, including organizations which would have to pay these fees, because it's clear that they recognize the vital importance of Oregon's safe drinking water efforts. So I recognize, of course, these are difficult budget times, and I wouldn't presume to recommend what the state of Oregon should do with its funds. I am simply here to support the water program and to emphasize that EPA is concerned, remains concerned about the need to comply with requirements essential to primacy. So I thank you very much for allowing this opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. Are there questions? Representative Dinkfelder.
I have one. Thank you. This is for Ms. Rodriguez. As far as primacy, do the majority of states hold primacy in the U.S.? I'm only more familiar with the West Coast states, but I'm just curious if you can give us a breakdown or percentage-wise.
I believe that they do, mm-hmm. And I know that, as I said, 49 out of 50 support the concept. From that, I would infer that they do. I'd be glad to bring some certainty on that. If you
know what the one is?
Wyoming.
Why am I not surprised about that one?
You say Wyoming's out of
compliance? Wyoming is the holdout.
Then they got more money and they know what to do with
it. Well, perhaps that's why they don't need. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Other questions? If I could ask Ms. Rodriguez one question here. What happens if we stay out of compliance?
Well, what happens theoretically for states that don't meet primacy requirements is that EPA needs to take over administration of the Safe Drinking Water Program, because that's, you know, Congress has mandated that either EPA or the state on EPA's behalf administer a safe drinking water program. If a state isn't able to or does not administer that program, then EPA is required to. The exact process as to how that would occur is way beyond any decision-making authority I would have, but that is the requirement.
Does EPA have the funds to do that?
Oh, well, that question is even more beyond my knowledge. Theoretically, we would not have a choice as an agency.
Yeah, I understand. It kind of is, and I don't mean, since you're with EPA, to be picking on the government at this point, but it's kind of one of those... We were talking before in a previous bill about mandates and unfunded mandates and this kind of thing, and this is kind of one of those partially funded mandates.
we'd like to give more money in this. But
talk to our president.
Yes, that, I suppose he could counter that he didn't have anything to do with it. Okay. Just trying to, you know, get a little bit of idea there. I'm curious, though, a little bit more about how seriously out of compliance we are. I mean, you said that every 6 years is the cycle for...
I believe the audit that was done said that there were 30% of the systems that should have been inspected were not. And that, if I could take a look, this is probably information that you have at your disposal as well.
That's fine.
It's a significant difference, particularly if you were to add up the number of people who were affected by those systems. The inspection program is right at the heart of the Safe Drinking Water Act program. Without inspections, there's just no way for any of us to have assurance that the requirements are being met. And while a lot of system operators take it upon themselves to meet those requirements, whether anybody's coming out to inspect or not, that's not universally true, as we have found.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimonies and for your coming. Appreciate your being here. And at this point, we have Mr. Brenneman and Mr. Sicking.
Thank you.
If you would, please. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm John Brenneman. I represent the Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon. It's a trade association of owners of parks who rent spaces to owners of mobile homes. We have nearly 500 members statewide. Jack and I, and with me is Jack Sicking, a board member and an owner of a small system. Jack and I were talking earlier before coming in. We think of approximately 500 members that perhaps 200 or 300 have their own water systems. We're not exactly sure. I've asked before if we couldn't start splitting that out in the membership to track them better, but that's what we think. Chuck Carpenter, who used to be a member of this body, is our executive director, was a member of the task force for a while, but did leave in protest over the fees. We think that the fee schedule is proportionally higher on the residents in our parks. Those are the people that are going to be paying the fee. It won't be Jack and his members. They'll pass those on in rent increases, just like every other assessment that's made to us. Last week, another member who is in Grants Pass today and who could not come, and I met with Ms. Shively and discussed the fee schedule. And in a nutshell, she asked near the end of the meeting what it would take for me to go away. And I suggested that if you looked at hookups, connections, rather than population, apparently in a park, the population per resident is about 1.7 per residence. But if you take a look at 300 connections in a park and applied that low figure of $150, I would make every attempt to take Jack and the other members and we'll go away. That's about all I've got to say at this point. I think Mr. Sicking would like to introduce himself in his park and tell you a little bit about operating it and his water system.
Thank you,
John.
John, and good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jack Sicking. It's actually John Sicking. Mom and Dad named me John, but they go by Jack.
Okay.
I was educated as a chemist, and I spent 5 years working for E.I. DuPont in the late 60s, early 70s. And in 1971, I ran for election, and I was elected to a local town council in New Jersey. And as part of that job, a couple years later, I was appointed to the Water and Sewer Authority. And I served 7 years on that body, 5 years as chairman, so I do have some background in water and sewer. And in 1996, I moved to Oregon, and I became associated with the Forest Park Mobile Village and Orion Drive Mobile Estates as the general chairman, and I bought both of those parks several years later. And today I'm the owner of it. So I talk to you as both an owner and as a user of the water, because I live in one of the parks. The problem that I see with Bill 2171 is it's putting the heavy hand of government further down on the backs of me, the small owners, and actually on the backs of the people that live in my park, because obviously I pass any costs that come to me there. And I just want to discuss with you some of the costs that we already incur, because we are under state regulations and we're pretty well looked after. In Forest Park Mobile Village, I spent $2,363.50 on our water system in 2004. And that's actually not a very good number. John pointed that out to me, because it was a high number. What happens is, in the testing of the water systems in Oregon, we have 125 tests that we have to run on every other year. So to be more fair, John said, well, give us the two-year average. So it cost me $3,077 in test over a 24-month period in Forest Park. Orion Drive's cost were $3,032. Total of the 2 years is $6,109. That is an average of $32.85 per space per year of testing. Now, I would submit to you folks that if you would go to Portland and say to those people there, you have to spend over a two-year period $32.85 per household in order to run your test, I bet you would have somewhat of an outcry over there. Because if you look at your rates in the pipeline for the community systems the size of Portland, you're talking about an inspection cost of $2,400 for 10,000 people. That's 24 cents per household. If you go down to the $150 that you're asking me to spend, you're talking $1.50. You see, there's a big discrepancy here that has to be pushed on to the other people. And I want to go on one step further, if I may. The people in the back of the room are really going to correct me on this if I'm wrong, because but I've been forced to take courses in Oregon to find out how to manage a water system and things of that nature, and I have. I have heard them say that the last major outbreak of waterborne disease in the state of Oregon was in 1979. Do I hear anybody cheering back there? That's a good record. That's a real good record. It was a surface water system. It was a medium-sized system, and someone fell down on their treatment of the water, and there was a pathogen that got through and caused some damage. That's 1979, my friend. That's 25 years ago. We're doing a darn good job in Oregon. We're doing a good job because of these costs that you're making me spend and every other system in the state. That's the way, and especially in a groundwater system. I have wells in both of my parks. In a groundwater system, the way you find out if your system is good or bad is to test the water. You're testing the water. These inspections are good. You know, they do pick up interesting little things, but they're not the type of things that are going to cause the big damage and death. In my humble opinion, as being a member of a water and sewer authority, as being an elected official, as being a taxpayer, I think that the main impetus behind getting these fees is to hire people, is to afford to hire people, is not to protect the welfare of the users of the water in Oregon. It is to get people on the payroll. And that's the only useful thing I can see out of this fee schedule or out of any other the stuff that's done above and beyond what we do on the testing. Now, just as an aside, here's what an inspection looks like. On January 11th of this year, Orient Drive Mobile Estates was inspected. Now, I've been associated with Orient Drive Mobile Estates since 1996, and I've never been inspected. That's 9 years. Supposed to be every 3 to 5 years, right? And the best I can figure was in 1989, that the last time that they had one of these inspections run. Now, this system must have gone to rack and ruin because it's been so long since it's been inspected. But this bold print right here is what the inspection is. It says, the water system appears to be in good operating condition. That's how it starts. It stays that way because we care about the people that are in our parks. We test the water. I drink the water myself. I live in a park. I drink the water myself. The water in Orient Drive, I would love to have in my park because it comes right down off the mountain. It's 165 feet into the ground. It comes out in the middle of the summertime as cold and as fresh and as clear as could be. It's not chlorinated. None of my wells are chlorinated. We don't have the stink that they have in this big city, and we don't have the problems either. And we don't need to put these types of costs back on the back. Now, if you want to hire people, knock the four bottom categories off here. Let us go the way we've been going and charge the other guys. But I don't think that that would be fair either. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. I'll stay with Jack because if I get to John,
I'm also hearing it there, so you got to speak up.
Okay.
I'm sorry about
we'll
that.
We'll shop. Thank you. thank you, Jack. Are there questions for Mr. Sickman? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, and I'm going to go with Jack, too, if you don't mind.
No problem.
Jack, you spend quite a lot of money on maintaining these water systems. Can you tell us what you spend the rest of the money for when you're not paying for inspection fees?
I'm sorry, I didn't get it.
Well, you indicated you spend around $3,000 every 2 years.
That's just to Coffey Laboratories, who actually takes the samples, takes them back to the laboratory, does the analysis, and sends them directly into the state. It's a double-blind system that I've set up in both parks. So I never touch the samples, but that's simply for testing water, the state-mandated test. The test, there's 125 things that are tested for. If you want to see what that looks like, I guess I could show you. I have it in here somewhere. But then every month there's the what I call the bugs, the coliform test to see if there's anything in there. And then there's a copper and lead that's done once a year. There's nitrates, which are important in Oregon because we're situated in a farming area, and if there's fertilizers that are getting into the water system, we want to know about it. And that's what we're spending the money for.
So if I may, Mr. Chair, so please, what you're talking about when you're talking about those fees is the. And I guess I didn't quite catch this, is that the direct examination of the water itself.
That's correct. Yeah, that's state-mandated test that I run, or I probably even federal-mandated. Those tests have to be run, and we're running them right now. But that's the way you tell if a system is bad. These inspections of it, you can say, well, you should cut the grass around the wellhead, you should put some concrete down over here, you should do this, you might have a problem if you don't do that. They're helpful. They're helpful things. So, you should perhaps have some of that stuff too. But it's just a further burden on the tenants. In my case now, if the people in either park saw weeds growing around my well system or discoloration in the water, out of the park they are, and I'm holding a bag. So besides that, in the one park I live, I'm drinking it.
Right.
So,
Thank you. I now understand the point you were making. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Other questions?
I have, Mr. Chair, a couple.
Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Mr. Brenneman. You had mentioned that you had about 500 members statewide. And that's not, obviously not everybody who owns Mobile Home Park is a member. of your association, or I don't know, maybe everybody is. But my question is, you mentioned that 200 to 300 of them have their own water system. Could you give us an example of what a typical size is? Because I'm trying to figure out where, under the community water systems, most of your customers, your clients, would fall into.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfeller, actually, there are about 1,200 parks statewide, the best of my knowledge, and like I said, we're under 500, just slightly under 500 in membership. Some of the members of MHCO have more than one park, but just have one park under membership. We think that this is the other park owner that couldn't make it today. He and I collaborated. We think that we have approximately 200 to 300 that have hookups of less than 300 hookups, connections.
So that means they serve less than 300 individual homes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, follow
and,
up?
And may I add further that we don't have many in that upper range. I think Jack Sicking is quite representative of more parks than not, and his is 42.
42 in one and 51 in the other.
42 and 51. That's more characteristic of our park size and membership.
Okay. And just a couple of quick follow-up questions, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Thank you. On the first page of the summary that we received from the Department of Human Services about midway down, one thing that is somewhat disturbing to me is the division reports that when drinking water quality problems occur, they usually occur in smaller systems that serve less than 3,300 people. And so that's why, and that's going to be most of your users or your members, I would imagine, would fall into the under 3,300 category. Would that be correct?
Chair, Representative, yes, that's true.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And just last question. What do you think?
Very quick sort of thing on that. Representative, that's most of the problems may appear there, but that's one of those correlation sort of things that doesn't really mean much to us because, in fact, most of the systems, you have more systems in that range, and so it's not.
Mr. Chair and Council, may I add with consultation with Jack? He and I've been with Manufactured Housing Communities since 92, a little bit before his time. We don't know of an instance with a water problem in any of our parks. I might stand corrected, but we don't know of one.
Yeah, you'll get positives on the coliforms on occasion, but it's not a matter of a life-threatening thing, you know, happening.
And just one follow-up question for Mr. Brenneman. Do you have any comments about the state primacy, and are you concerned at all that if we do not adopt this, as you've heard here earlier in several testimony, that we may lose control and have Big Brother, so to speak, come in and take over our drinking water program? No offense to the
Mr. Chair, Representative Dink, I'm glad you asked that, actually. In the late 80s, when I was a member of the Senate, the business community asked for our DEQ to do a state oversight on leaking underground tanks. And I went along and I voted for it. And I look back on it as one of the worst votes I ever made as a senator. One night, a couple that owned a service station in Sheridan in my district called and they were crying. They were in their 70s. They were looking forward to retiring on that service station. And it was being shut down and boarded up. And I got to tell her that the reason the state did that was and took supremacy was so that the federals wouldn't put them out of business. And it wasn't a very comforting thing to tell that couple. I would ask further that maybe you check with Wyoming and see how happy they are with letting the feds do it. I know our neighboring state of Idaho does not have state oversight in many areas. And although they apparently do here, they seem to be quite happy in a lot of other areas by letting the federal government do it.
Other Questions?
Chairman Galbraith. Yeah, thanks. I just want to ask, Jack, and you may have already said this, but did you have a sense of how much the fee might be that would be passed along to one of your residents?
Well, whatever fee I get, 100% is passed along.
Right. And so do you have a sense of how much that would be to
well,
the...
Well, it would probably amount to less than $1 per month per space.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chair, can I just follow up on that? Because of I think Representative Dalto raises a good point. Just for the record, this is more of an observation. I happen to represent a district in Portland where we are soon to have the highest water and sewer rates in the entire West Coast, and we would love to have a $32 bill because I have many, and I hear this from many residents, and we have been forced by the federal government to do some pretty huge measures, I'm sure you know, and we may be going to visit the big pipe if we have a chance. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
That's a possibility.
But we are seeing huge increases in our water and sewer bill, and I can tell you it's a hardship. However, we know that's the right thing to do, and we have to do that. And we're seeing our water bills increase at an incredible amount. So I have a little concern. I'm very concerned to make sure that people. I know you're very conscientious, and I maybe you can vouch for the rest of your other members as well, but. Yeah, I just would hope that everybody's as conscientious as you in how diligent you've been in testing your systems.
Yeah. Well, in general, though, you'll find that a service your size will have a lower cost per space than a service my size, regardless of what we do.
Yeah.
I understand that. We have many other things we're paying for that has driven up our costs incredibly.
Representative.
Thank you.
If you'd accept and push and help me push some of the bills I have, we could lower those costs for you.
Hey, let's talk. That's what we're all about, compromise.
Sure, John Brennan, may I add, manufactured housing communities in Oregon are members who provide very affordable housing all over the state. There are some instances that it's gotten unaffordable, but it's been reflective of the high land prices in Oregon. There has not been a new park in some time being built, and for a variety of reasons. But when you look now, for instance, in a small community, by the time you buy the land and you pay all the system development charges and the hookup fees, it's no longer affordable. It's not a housing option that's affordable anymore. I think you see an industry that really is changing, and it's probably not going to have any impact any expansion in the future.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that last comment. Representative Dalto.
Did you? Oh,
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Jack, before my district was changed with redistricting some time ago, I think maybe you were in my district. I covered Oak Grove. Now my district has moved north. But I served quite a few different mobile home parks in my district, and I visited, I think, all of them. And I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you staying, living in your home parks. And many of them were owned by people from out of state, and they didn't have that kind of love and care that you were providing in your mobile home park. So I understand your concern, but I also want to let you know that we appreciate you staying there and providing the kind of service that you do for the citizens in your park.
Well, thank you. I'm just one of the other poor people, that's all.
Yeah.
Just because I own it doesn't mean I'm rich.
I know that. I know that.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate your testimony. Appreciate your being here this afternoon. Before we adjourn, we did have the Oregon Plan Overview by DEQ. That's being held over until Wednesday, the 28th. Until Wednesday, March 2nd. I am corrected by staff on that. And also, and there is no meeting on Friday. There's no meeting on Monday.
And Mr. Chair?
Well, let's save it up for Monday till we get back.
I think that the illustration is that it's later than you think.
And let it be known that this was the committee's day to deal with health issues in the state of Oregon.
Yes, indeed.
Or potential health issues in the state of Oregon. Thank you all. Thank you very much for being here today. Appreciate all of the testimony. I appreciate all of you sitting through the hearings. And with that, we are adjourned.